Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. This is Sonia Rappaport.
And my name is Willie Simpson.
And today, there are no episode numbers for us to screw up.
What?
We're going to take a little hiatus from the X-Men Task Podcast, as you normally know it, and we're going to talk a little bit about Deadpool 2, which we just saw today.
Wow, that's very exciting. A rare solo movie review episode.
Yeah, a quick one here for you.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's kind of funny. This is a legitimate X-Men movie, obviously. And we have had this plan to review every X-Men movie in order. Mm-hmm. But we also make it a habit on this show to talk about new Marvel movies as they come out. And we usually tie them to, you know, whatever X-Men episode we're doing. Like, we recently saw Avengers Infinity War, and we just tacked that on the end of one of the Beyond Good and Evil episodes we recently covered.
Right.
But that's a little different, obviously, because the MCU Avengers thing is not really tied to the X-Men movie series, obviously.
Right.
So, but are we breaking our own covenant here by talking about Deadpool 2 a bit out of order?
I mean, yes, we are. Also, there will be spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie yet and plan to and don't want the plot points to be spoiled, just turn off this podcast right now and save it until after you've seen the movie.
Yeah, apologies to Ori Adams, who has complained as I set out the Facebook alarm.
Yeah.
He says he hasn't seen the movie yet for various reasons, so I'm sorry, Adam, but we kind of need to do this now.
While it's fresh.
Well, that goes back to my original point. We could wait, like, forever until we get to Deadpool 2 in the continuity of movies, because we haven't even gotten to X-Men 3 yet.
Right.
X-3, the Suckening, whatever it's called.
Uh-huh.
It is fresh, and it's fun to talk about movies you've just seen.
And it is basically an X-Men movie, so, I mean, it feels like it fits in. Right, and because, like, it just came out and it's recent, but, like, also, the very end of this movie plays with our ideas of continuity
yeah,
a lot.
Right, yeah.
So imagine I'm going to give it a pass.
Yeah, we have a little time slide device in our collective forearms, and we're summoning them as Cable does.
Also, it's fun, and Yeah,
it's fun. So, major spoilers to those who haven't seen Deadpool 2. I do feel a little less confident going down the road of spoilers for this one than I did Avengers. You know, Avengers made $250 million in its opening weekend or something absurd.
Yeah.
So, in my mind, I was like, anyone who listens to this podcast or cares about superhero movies or Marvel, they've probably seen Avengers.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, screw it, we're just talking about all the details. Deadpool, I know it's set to make a ton of money. And the first one was, like, one of the largest R-rated hits of all time.
Yeah.
But I'm still a little leery spoiling the whole thing on Monday morning for all our fans. So just another warning of spoilers for those who haven't seen it. Seriously, just wait to download this episode if you haven't watched it yet.
Well, they have it downloaded if they're listening.
Right, yes.
But just wait to listen to the rest of it, because I have no interest in talking about this without doing spoilers.
Yeah, you and your infernal logic.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, so, we're doing Deadpool 2 this week. I'm very excited to be talking about this. We'll be back to our regular scheduled broadcast next week. So,
with Morlocks.
With Morlocks and Christmas time in May, or will it be June by then? No, I think it's still May.
Yeah.
So, Deadpool 2.
I don't know. Yeah.
Right off the bat, I like that the movie doesn't have a subtitle.
Mm-hmm.
All these X-Men movies and Marvel movies have these dumb subtitles now, which I don't. I'm of the old school where I like the endless sequencing of movies,
mm-hmm.
where you're Back to the Futures 1, 2, and 3, mm-hmm. no subtitles. It wasn't like Back to the Future, the Old West. It was
right.
Back to the Future 3, and we just had to keep counting.
Yeah.
And they did that to an extent in the MCU. Iron Man 1, 2, and 3, there was no subtitles on any of those. Although they did have, I think they had subtitles on all the Captain America ones.
Yeah.
And I think they had subtitles.
The Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And so forth.
And Civil War.
Yeah.
Thor 2 Dark World. I don't
Ragnarok.
Know if he was even called. Yeah. I don't even know if it's called Thor 2 or Thor 3. It might have just been called Thor Dark World or Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, that's.
It gets hard to keep them all straight when you start knowing them by titles and not by sequence. And apparently, there's going to be a Deadpool 3. So.
Well, the story about Deadpool 3 is that it could be, like, X-Force.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
So I don't.
So you might get your subtitle that you don't want after all.
I don't know what we're getting with Deadpool 3. We could get Deadpool 3 and then the X-Force spinoff, which he is supposed to feature into.
Uh-huh.
Or we're getting. Or there is no Deadpool 3. It's just going to be X-Force featuring Deadpool. More, yeah. You know, something up to.
All right,
we don't
get ahead of ourselves.
Right. We're only talking about Deadpool 3. You know, how should we start talking about this movie? Should we sort of go through the plot as we remember it, blow by blow, or should we give some general impressions first and then sort of work our way through the weeds in a convoluted way?
I vote convolution.
It's going to be convoluted no matter what we talk about.
My real first impression of this movie was that it wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought the first Deadpool was, like, laugh-out-loud funny at a lot of moments. I was kind of expecting the same thing from this one, but for me, like, a lot of the humor was, like, a little too heavy-handed or, like, didn't really hit the mark in terms of, like, the sense of humor they applied with it. And I liked it. I was interested in the storyline, but I wasn't, like, laughing out loud.
You know, I'm kind of right there with you, but I just had the realization as to why it wasn't as funny as the first one.
Because it's the second in a trilogy.
And we're just sequels or just... No. Yeah, well, that's part of it. I would say... I think the reason is... I think the first one was so fresh in general.
Yeah, the style was new.
Yeah, it was like... I mean... I wouldn't call it the airplane of superhero movies. It wasn't like a straight up Zucker Brothers farce, you know, one of those like wacky Naked Gun type movies.
Uh-huh.
But there was an element to that. It was a total, you know what? Okay, this is the ultimate comparison. And I actually had this thought earlier this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's the Austin Powers of superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real send up. You know, Austin Powers is a send-up of the James Bond franchise.
Right.
And it was, like, a nice mix between, like, you got that airplane Naked Gun, like, type humor in Austin Powers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also, like, a clever satire at the same time, sending up the tropes and the style.
Yeah.
And but mixing in some nice action and some clever gags and visual gags.
I could see that.
And to me... Deadpool 2 reminded me very much of Austin Powers 2.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Austin Powers was like this stealth hit, the first one.
Right.
That it was kind of cool, and there was a music video, I think, with Madonna and things. And, you know, it was just like, it was like nice to see Mike Myers again in a new character,
mm-hmm.
in a new setting beyond Wayne's World and some other things he might have done.
Yeah.
And Austin Powers 2, there's, like, a lot more build-up and hype. There's going to be a lot more celebrities in it or a lot more cameos and a lot more off-the-wall craziness. They're, like, doubling down on everything that worked in Austin Powers 1 and kind of sluicing off the parts that weren't quite as interesting.
Right.
And I remember seeing Austin Powers 2. It was, like, this big spectacle. The audience was in hysterics. It appealed to audiences of all ages. I remember that as well. But at the same time, it was wackier. It was more irreverent,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of like more forgettable in a weird way. You know, I haven't seen the Austin Powers movies in a while myself. But anyway, I got the same vibe from Deadpool 2. Like, I feel like the jokes in Deadpool 2, while funny, are going to age really quickly.
Yeah.
Like, the half-life on them are going to go by really fast.
Right.
I don't know if in 10 years you're going to, like, put on Deadpool 2 and not... You're either not going to remember all the references or get them, or they're just not going to be funny anymore.
But to me, it's not even the references. It's, like, the style of humor. I don't know. Like, I like the sort of thing where he, like, breaks the fourth wall because, like, that's true to the comics and the character.
Right.
So, like, that's fine. But, like, there's a lot of that, but, like, that's good. But, like, things that the audience in general was laughing at or I think were meant to be, like, really big jokes, like the baby legs
mm-hmm.
sequence there and, like...
To me, that's a very Austin Powers gag.
I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, not my brand of humor.
Well, it's like, I think, I got to keep going back to Austin Powers. It reminds me, you know, I saw those movies when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
And I was 14, 15. And, you know, the various fart jokes and the other, like, jokes about moles and Dr. Evil's son.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff really appealed to me and made me laugh as a 15-year-old. And if I was 34 at the time, which is I am now, and I saw them, I might still laugh at it.
Uh-huh.
But it might not have hit me in quite the same way.
Right.
I'm not sure if Deadpool... I think overall, Deadpool's more interesting than Austin Powers, don't get me wrong.
Right, yeah.
As just like an idea in a franchise.
Just a deeper story, yeah.
Right, but at the same time, to me, it is similar to that. It's just like a bunch of wacky, like, visual gags.
Yeah.
Mainly.
Right.
And some gross-out humor.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, like, topical references and things. And like I said, it's just, it has that quality. And in a way, that's powerful for the movie, especially for, that's what a hit comedy has to be in a lot of ways.
Right.
It's like this event where everyone can laugh in the moment and share in, like, the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's funny. There's a character in the movie
named Zeitgeist.
Right,
yeah.
Our first major spoiler. well, no, I guess Baby Legs was. But anyway, yeah, so it checks the boxes for what a comedy has to be, and a lot of it is a lot of gross out, like, teenager humor.
Yeah. Okay.
But it's like, I think us is like older and more, you know, jaded in a way.
Yeah.
It's not going to hit us quite as hysterically as it might a younger person.
I think what you said is right also, though, that it's like there's something to it being the sequel, so it's like we've seen this type of humor once before, whereas it was like pretty new in the first one.
It was a fresh satire.
And I think, like, I can't remember if we talked about Guardians of the Galaxy or how extensively we talked about it on here, but I had that same feeling. Like, first Guardians of the Galaxy, I was really, like, I really liked that take on the Marvel Universe, because it was also, like, kind of new, and it was its own thing.
Right.
And then the second one, I was expecting it to be, like, on par in terms of, like, sense of humor and stylization or whatever that is. And I was, like, a little bit let down with the humor in the second Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Similar feeling. I still liked it, and I still thought the storyline was interesting, and it kept me engaged the whole way through. But that element of surprise is really important for actually getting you to laugh.
Yes, I totally agree. You nailed it. I think when these superhero movies are straight up comedies, a lot of the surprise is used in the first one.
Yeah.
So, like you said, in Guardians 2, it's like they're in many ways running through the same beats again,
because
you've got the same characters and the same characters are back.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the big jokes that work in a movie like Deadpool 1 or Guardians 1 is you're meeting the character for the first time, whoever the character is, and they're surprising you with their humor. And you're like, oh, we have to deal with this person now. Like, right. Drax, for instance, in Guardians 1 is really funny when you first meet him.
Yeah.
And you kind of get to know him, and his humor gets more revealed as it goes along. In Guardians 2, you're happy to see him again, but, you know,
there's no surprises there, because they have to stay consistent with the character.
Yeah, and, like, they do try to keep it, like, fresh in a way, like, keep talking about Drax.
Right.
Like, by giving him a new character to play off, like Mantis, for instance.
Right. Uh-huh.
And he keeps trying to say shocking stuff. But really, you know, it's just, like, it's just a freshness factor.
Yeah, the element of surprise is lost.
Right. So, tying back to Deadpool 2, the thing that I found most interesting about it, And I like the movie, is that I just found the movie more interesting than funny.
Uh-huh.
Like, I like that. I like the action. I thought the action was interesting. It kept me engaged. I liked the set pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I liked all the set pieces, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the new characters. And I liked the story. I liked being in the X-Men universe.
Yeah.
And I found that rewarding and satisfying as an X-Men fan.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, the comedy was like a decoration on top of all this like interesting movie going on underneath.
Yeah.
And it's not like the most interesting movie in the world, but it was interesting enough. Like the first the thing that I like about the first Deadpool movie, which I guess we should talk about a little as well, is that I thought that was a very interesting superhero movie too, on top of the humor.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a really nice, like, creamy mix of the two elements.
Uh-huh.
I loved his origin in the first movie. Like, you know, he volunteers for this program because he's dying of cancer, so they have to torture him, and it's while he's being tortured, he's doing a bunch of, like, gallows humor, but it's just like a really nice mix of, like, really, like, a disturbing set piece, and the humor, and you get, like, the nice superhero origin with, like, the Deadpool flavor, and to me, that's, like, what elevates that movie to something special. It's like just a nice, cool mix, because when he finally breaks out of that torture prison, when he gets his powers, it's a really fucked up scene. I don't know if you remember, he's fighting the bad guy. The building's on fire. You see his friend that he made at the torture center is dying as well.
Yeah.
And he ends up being impaled on some, like, metal spike. And the guy, his enemy in the movie, Francis, like, turns the spike into a candy cane. And he can't really get out. And the whole building collapses on him in ash. And you really see his Wolverine healing power tested.
Right.
And it's, like, it's fucked up and it's cool. And the stakes are high. And like I said, the whole time he's making jokes, but you get that cool, like, mutant story going on, like a classic X-Men mutant story.
Yeah, right.
So in this movie, I think you still have a lot of great comic book elements like that, and a lot of great set pieces, and a lot of cool stuff and scenes we see, but it's like, I think the humor is just more prominent.
Mm-hmm.
It's like more of the star of the film.
In the first one.
Then in the first one, right. And so...
In the second one, you think it's more...
Yeah,
prominent.
I think the humor is more, okay, like, central to the story than whatever's going on with the plot and the whole X-Men stuff, which is still interesting.
Got it. Because to me, it seems like kind of the centerpiece of the second one is integrating the X-Men universe a little bit more seamlessly into, like, the Deadpool storyline. You know, they really, like, make an effort with that.
Yeah, I think one of the jokes in the first one, one of the big jokes in the first one is he goes to the X-Mansion, which is kind of surprising in itself that he's even in the X-Men world.
Yeah.
And he makes a joke like, oh, it's just you, Colossus, and Teenage Negasonic, Teenage Warhead.
Warhead.
Right, yeah. I was getting her name messed up. And he's like, we can't afford any cameos beyond you.
Right.
And, you know, Colossus ignores him because he's making a fourth wall joke.
Right.
In this movie... It's the same joke again, but we get way more cameos.
Right, yeah.
So
we just get a glimpse of Beast and
right,
everybody.
Professor X, yeah. James McAvoy. We see the whole cast from X-Men Apocalypse, which is funny that they chose that cast instead of the more, like, Famke Janssen cast.
Oh, whatever.
Well, yeah, it's, like, yeah, I know.
Equivalent
right.
for the
but
purposes of this movie.
It does make you wonder about, like, what's going on with the timeline, you know.
Yeah.
I know. That's stupidly nitpicky, especially for Deadpool. I'm just saying it's worth pointing out that
right, yeah.
for whatever continuity's sake, it's the updated, young, sexier cast than the old, reliable cast. Yeah. But, okay, beyond that, so in this movie you get, and it's not just, like, getting a brief glimpse of the X-Men, because they're there, but, like, for 1 second.
Mm.
Like, literally. I thought it would, you know, I spoil myself when it comes to movies, so I read all the spoilers
yeah,
before.
I know.
And I kind of regret I did, because maybe that's why some of the humor didn't hit me as hard.
Finally, you regret the spoilers.
Yeah. But, like, I thought, I read that, oh, the X-Men will be in this, there's a cameo. And I was like, oh...
You thought they were going to actually do something.
I thought they'd at least have a line or two. You know?
Nope.
No lines, nothing. You see them for 1 second. But beyond that, there are more, like, X-Men universe cameos in a general sense.
Well, not even just cameos. Like, Juggernaut is a character.
There you
like,
go.
I won't say, like, a main character, but, like, a significant character.
Yeah. The best on-screen movie representation of Juggernaut to this point.
Yeah.
We haven't reviewed X-Men 3 yet, but when we do, we'll talk about how annoying the Juggernaut is in that.
Yeah, but they did a good job with him in this one, I thought.
Yeah.
I like that metal helmet deal they gave him.
I like that he explained that he wears it to protect himself from his brother, Professor X, from mental attacks. So that it was kind of funny. I still think a question remains. I also like that they were vague on whether or not he was a mutant. Because he's not supposed to be a mutant. He's, as we all know, as we've seen in the X-Men cartoon and from the X-Men comics, he has the power of the magical gem Sidorak.
Right.
That he finds in the Kreen War or something, and it gives him magical Juggernaut powers.
Yeah,
it's
right.
like a cosmic power. So in this movie, but he's in the mutant prison. I'm not sure what's going on with Juggernaut in the movie as far as, like, who he's supposed to be. We can just assume he's just the Juggernaut.
Yeah.
And that's all there is to it.
Yeah, why not?
Right. So, yeah, we get the Juggernaut. We get, like... mentions of X-Force, the comic book,
mm-hmm.
whether or not we have the actual X-Force is a debate.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought Juggernaut was well done, as we've said. I thought Domino was well done.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not very well versed in X-Force.
Neither. I'm not well versed in Domino as a character herself either. I've never even read a Domino line in a comic book ever.
Uh-huh.
The only time I've even seen Domino is in my, like, X-Men and Marvel trading cards as a kid,
uh-huh.
and in the various cameos she has in the X-Men animated series,
yeah.
in which she's more of, like, a blue and white colored character. Yeah. You know, she's, like, more alien looking.
I mean, I guess I'll just say, like, I'm not comparing her to her comic book representation. I'm not saying that it's faithful, necessarily. I'm just saying, as a character in this movie, I enjoyed her presence.
Yes, she was very... The actress who played her, Zazie Beetz, which is a very interesting name. Uh-huh. She was, like, super charismatic and sexy and interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, her power is luck, which is the same as Longshot.
Right.
And then, like... And, you know, I don't know if that's the power of Domino in the comics. Probably is. I don't know. Like I said, I just know nothing about Domino. But it's just weird that, like, Longshot has the same power of luck as well. And there's also a mention of the Mojo universe.
I love that.
Yeah, that was great. this movie is very satisfying for X-Men TAS fans, I have to say. You know, I always make a point of saying that the X-Men movies are very heavily influenced by the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go that far with this movie and say that this is influenced by the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would say it's just probably more comic-based than anything.
Yeah.
But you get elements... You get, like, broad plot elements from the cartoon that you could attribute to the cartoon. For instance, Cable just... The way Cable time travels back to the present is one.
I thought Josh Brolin was great as Cable.
Yeah, he's having quite a marvelous month.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, Thanos and Cable, two roles in two different Marvel universes. That's pretty funny. And there's a Thanos reference.
Yeah, that's really funny,
Okay, so that's a good debate. Is Josh Brolin better as Thanos or Cable?
I think, like, what makes him great in both roles is that he plays them so differently that, like, it's almost...
Equal.
He's almost unrecognizable. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like one reminds you of the other while you're watching it, necessarily.
Yeah.
I think that would be, like, a danger with many actors, that they might be played, like, somewhat similarly, or even in terms of, like, body language or something, but, like... I didn't have that feeling at all watching him.
Yeah, I mean, and part of that's because he's a purple CGI monster in Avengers.
Yeah, that's true.
But, like, no, but you're absolutely right. In Avengers, he plays Thanos with a lot of soul, surprising soul, and a lot of, like, a weird, like, wispy wisdom and grandeur, you know, that I wasn't expecting. But Americanized because of his accent.
Yeah.
There's just something beautiful about the Thanos part, I thought. Just, like, a really great character.
Uh-huh.
Just really... His stage presence in that movie is remarkable, especially because he's a fully CGI mocap performance.
Mm-hmm.
Cable is, you're right, totally different performance, different character. It's your classic 90s steroid Duke Nukem... character that was very prominent from the 90s.
Right. And half robot, half man.
Right. Cyborg, all adrenaline, masculinity, big gun.
But he has that, like, tragic backstory with his family, so he has to, like, drink beers and look sadly in the mirror.
Yeah. you know, Josh Brolin's is a movie star, so he's got enormous stage presence and just great gravitas.
Yeah.
And Cable is another great part for him. Like, he elevates the role in this movie, you know, which is weird. It's weird as I'm saying it out loud. I think a large reason to enjoy Deadpool 2 is because Josh Brolin's great.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, the movie to me was more interesting than funny.
Because his character also, there's nothing really to laugh at with him. You know, he's like a very serious
It makes me want to see a Cable spinoff or a Cable in the X-Men serious movies thing. I'd be really excited to see him in a more, like, serious part.
Yep.
And I just, like, the details of Cable, I thought, were really well done for a movie. I mean, like, you know, to me, a hallmark of judging these superhero movies is how well they bring the character to life. You know, that's, like, one of the biggest... I think people who don't like superhero movies don't understand of why fans love them is because it's the fetish of seeing these characters come to life.
Yeah.
So, for instance, Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, it couldn't have come to life more perfectly. And that's why... that character continues to rule in the screens, and the actor, you know, continues to kill it, is because it's just such an interesting marriage of fantasy and real life.
Mm-hmm.
that, like, just blows people's minds in a way that you were never expecting. It just continues to work.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Reynolds pulls it off as Deadpool as well. He's mm-hmm. just like a, you know, he comes off the comic book page into reality in a beautiful way. I think Hugh Jackman did it as Wolverine to a large extent. You know, yeah. there are some things you can nitpick about him. You know, he's too tall, or he's maybe, like, too good-looking or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, all in all, his performance was, like, so amazing and excellent. And he was, like, the best part of all those movies.
Right.
It was, like, it's, like, we just rewatched The Wolverine.
Yeah.
For just randomly. The second Wolverine spinoff movie. And just seeing those claws pop out of his hand, I mean, it's cool, you know?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so back to Cable, I just think it checks that box big time of, like, yeah. this is, like, as awesome as Cable's going to look in real life.
He must have spent forever getting into, like, makeup and costume every day,
yeah.
but, like, it was worth it.
They probably
it was
had,
really
like,
good.
I wonder if he just had half his body covered in green screen, like, paint or tape or something.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know
how that works.
Yeah, it looked
good.
Great, yeah.
yeah. You know who I could have stood to see a little more of was, I can't remember her name now, but... The wife, Deadpool's
yeah,
wife.
Yeah, Marina, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Bakarain. Uh-huh. The woman from Firefly.
Right, exactly. Of Firefly fame.
Yeah.
I really like
People
that
People probably
actress.
Know her more from Homeland, but...
Right, yeah.
We're not big Homeland fans, so...
But we are big Firefly fans.
Yes, we are. Yeah, she's awesome.
But I thought, like, she was really great, and they gave her a whole, you know, they gave her backstory and everything in Deadpool 1, but... It was almost like, now you know her backstory, and there's nothing more to her at this juncture, yeah. so, you know...
They kill her off, much like Austin Powers 2, where they kill off Elizabeth Hurley in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Because he finds true love in the first one, and they're like, oh, that's stupid for a James Bond-type character. He needs to have a new woman every time.
Yeah.
This one, they didn't quite... They kill her off...
Well, they keep her for a couple of scenes, because...
Well, she's... The point... They don't kill off the character.
Yeah, right.
The character gets to live on, and as she should.
Right.
To me, what made another reason why Deadpool 1 is great, and actually why I think Deadpool 1's a better movie, I'll just say it, is because she was a central figure in the first one.
Yeah.
Her romance with Ryan Reynolds...
Is, like, the only driving force behind everything that he does, really. Like, it gives him meaning.
Yeah, it's his emotional truth and purpose. But in the first one, it was just so... I just love their romance uh-huh. as characters. It was really fun and sweet and... I wouldn't say it was, like, entirely realistic, but there was an element of realism to their romance.
Uh-huh.
You just bought that they were two people in love that shared, like, a happy life together.
Right, even though they both had, like, fucked up histories.
Right, they
stuff,
were emotionally like, compatible,
yeah.
and it was just something true to it. So, in the second one, they kind of take her out of the picture, not to the movie's detriment, but it's as a shame just because she's a
just
powerful
like every
actress.
Time she had a scene, I was like, oh, great, like she's back, that's cool. But like, then I started kind of thinking about it, like, all right, so her backstory is that like she was working as a stripper or
a prostitute
or both. I don't know, I can't really remember,
right.
to be honest. But then, like, you know, they get married, or at least they like are living together,
yeah.
whatever it is, they're together. So then she doesn't have that job anymore. So then she, like, sits around the apartment in a sweater all day.
In a sexy outfit.
Like,
yeah.
I, you know,
well,
just a little bit more characterization for her, like, would have been nice.
So, but in a way, like, see, the thing is, like, with every complaint we can bring up with a movie like that, and I think that's a legitimate one,
uh-huh.
I think the movie responds to.
Okay.
So they kill her right away.
Right, yeah.
So... Before you can think twice about, like, what is she doing here? What's her purpose? You know, the story's kind of over. They get rid of her.
Well, no, that's the thing, though, is that, like, what is her purpose is easily answered. Like, she's the thing that makes Deadpool keep going.
Right.
But that's all she is in this movie. That's my only point, is, like, she's very one-dimensional.
Yeah, that's true.
In this movie.
Yeah. So, right, they don't really...
And they could have used that... better, you know, like she was a full-fledged character in the last movie, and she's a good actress. She's a great actress for this part, so
yeah,
like, that's a little underused to me.
But that's part all. Of the, like, that's the Austin Powers two-ification of this movie. It's like, you want to, the main purpose of the movie is, like, you want to up the wackiness, everything you love from the first one.
Yeah.
So you need a lot of crazy action, a lot of crazy cameos, going down a lot of paths that you didn't go down the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't have his unsuperpowered wife in the middle of it all and have it... I feel like you can't have him do as many Looney Tunes stuff if
yeah.
she's there commenting
right.
the whole time or just sitting at home doing nothing. Like, So from a storytelling standpoint, to me it makes sense that she has to get removed from the main course of action, mm-hmm. you know, and pushed to the side. Like I said, a detriment because she's a great actress and she had a great part in the first one.
Yeah.
But logical from, like, what they're trying to do in this movie. So, whatever. So
I don't know about that, but anyway, yeah.
That's like, but I kind of agree with you. It's kind of like, it's a bummer and a little, you know, because we like to see more of her.
Yeah.
So, you know, this movie, the plot essentially is that he kills himself because his wife dies. So the movie opens with these amazing set pieces where they show him as an international assassin who kills a bunch of bad guys.
Oh, yeah. I really like that sequence.
Yeah. I love the cool. The opening was amazing. I thought that was one of the strongest parts of the movie, seeing him, you know, take on these Japanese warlords and things of that nature, mm-hmm. and just hilarious, fun set pieces.
Yeah.
And then as a consequence of that, he's made a lot of enemies. So these criminals invade his home and they kill his wife. Which was kind of like an interesting, you weren't expecting that kind of blowback, but hey, that's like a real, again, like a real consequence of him being who he is, mm-hmm. which touches on like that grittiness of the first movie. Mm-hmm. So I like that. And then, you know, he then wants to kill himself, obviously, because his life has no more meaning. And again, another interesting sequence where he kills himself or tries to, and then Colossus sort of finds all his body parts and shoves him in a bag, and I guess that heals him. Mm-hmm. I thought we were going to see that. I thought we were going to see, like, him stick the body back together. Eh. Yeah, I know. It's probably better we didn't. It's just, it's funnier that he's just in a duffel bag and he comes out mm-hmm. as a person. So then Colossus tries to convince him, like, to join the X-Men and to become a superhero. And he reluctantly agrees, and in the midst of that, I'm not going to go over every plot point. I'm just
oh, I thought maybe we were done with being convoluted, and now you're going to go over every
plot point. I just want to, like, segue to a next interesting discussion point. You know, I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll find it. So, you know, and then the whole plot of the movie is about there's this boy at some kind of fucked up orphanage where there's a bunch of mutants and they're being experimented on by some kind of religious zealot. Mm-hmm. It says it's like the Essex Orphanage, which, again, it's like another vague reference to Mr. Sinister, but Mr. Mm-hmm. Sinister is nowhere to be found in this movie. It's also a weird play on Scott Summers' fucked up childhood, where Mr. Sinister fucked him up in an orphanage as mm-hmm. well. So,
what do you think of the kid, the actor?
I mean, I had mixed feelings about the kid actor.
Really?
Sometimes it worked for me. Uh-huh. I think by the end it worked for me.
Yeah.
But leading up to it, I thought it was just they were playing him for laughs, and I thought it was just kind of like not so funny.
Oh, I didn't really get that sense. I thought it was like pretty good because the whole story is about a bunch of like misfits, basically. You know?
Yeah. Like, I think the story was like the emotional story of him trying to like rescue an abused mutant kid mm-hmm. made sense, and it made sense for the Deadpool character to care because he himself was experimented on, and
right, but also because the way ties the kid in with the X-Men themes written is like he is really looking for like a team or like some kind of support family, or something. Yeah. You know, it's like he tries to cozy up to Deadpool and be like, "We're partners. We did that great." And Deadpool's like, "No." And then he does the same thing with the Juggernaut. You know, like, "Hey, we're partners. We're in this together." Like that Juggernaut's not anybody's partner. He's like a lunatic. You know, so
you know, there's a lot of
there's like something sweet about the characterization of the kid. Yeah. I thought
I'm just thinking this movie's clever. I mean, there's allusions to Logan. Like, there's a direct one. He's got like a Logan toy,
right?
But more than that, it's similar to Logan in that he's teamed up with a misfit mutant kid,
right,
who he needs to set right in a weird way, like adopt like a son.
It's more about like his own absolution than about like the kid, really.
Yeah. And there's just some good themes. I mean, that was a good theme in Logan because like they boil down the X-Men story to its essence, like a mentor leading on a child in a crazy world that's against them. And it's similar to here.
Right.
And what I like about the movie is like ultimately, when you step back and see the whole plot, it was just a good, decent X-Men tale. Mm-hmm. It wasn't of epic scope of epic, like, fighting the ultimate villain that's going to destroy the world, mm-hmm. or nothing like that. It was just, like a good, like, themed X-Men story, where you've got a troubled kid who needs saving in some way, yeah. and there's some consequences along the way.
Right.
So, from that point of view, I think it, like, killed as an X-Men story.
You know, I'll
because it was just,
that.
It was, like, basic, you know?
Right. Like, there was plenty of death and destruction along the way, but it didn't have to be... like
yeah.
Armageddon or so, or near Armageddon, you know?
It was kind of fun, like, because it's an R-rated movie, the amount of civilian casualties that must be going on in the behind the scenes in the backgrounds is yeah. so high.
Yeah.
And it's like, in a way, it's more destructive than anything you see in the Avengers, because they make a point of trying to rescue all the humans that they can.
Right.
Or say that the city's been abandoned or something.
Right.
You know, sometimes they go into themes of, like, of collateral damage, but in this movie there's a ton of collateral damage, a ton of collateral death, and nobody cares or talks about it.
Yeah.
And so, in a weird way, like the stakes are, like, weirdly higher than when someone's trying to, like, blow up the earth.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but yeah, so, but, like, so the mayhem is way more intense than we see in a normal superhero movie,
mm-hmm.
but the stakes are a lot lower.
Yeah.
And it's refreshing because it allows just, like, a simple comic book story that you would read in, like, Deadpool 293, you know what I mean? Instead of, like, the grand, like, classic annual or something.
Right.
So, you know, it's, like, mainly about him trying to get with his boy. Like I said, I thought a lot of the character of the boy was played up for laughs to start. Like, he's overweight, and he thinks he's, like, a gangster,
mm-hmm.
and he's got all these, like, weird, like, stupid pop culture views about how his life is going, and, but...
Yeah, but...
But then he does, like, that character, too, also grows a little bit over time.
Right, I was gonna say that's... kind of part of the deal with being a teenager is that, like, you're trying on different hats and, like, you know, you don't have, like, a true self yet. You're not mature.
Oddly, the movie, like, weirdly prescient about getting in the mindset of a troubled, like, teenage boy, because we've got all this horrible stuff in the news, as we always do, you know, like the mass shooting again in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to draw this movie to that, but, I mean, it was on my mind just a little bit. You know, and, like, Deadpool is trying to, you know, in a movie that, like, glorifies guns and violence and, like, consequence-free killing of civilians, you know, it's easy to forget all that stuff. But, like, I think, like, beyond that, the movie's still making a point about trying to reach out to troubled children,
mm-hmm.
you know, troubled violent children who could be mass murderers. And stuff, and so...
I don't know if, like, the dots are that clearly connected
they're not,
for the movie makers.
Well, just me, in, like, the context of when a movie is released, when you see it, I mean, like, all that stuff comes into play. So, I guess the point I'm trying to say is, like, this movie could be seen as really crass and really fucked up. Like, I know when the movie Kingsman was released initially,
mm-hmm.
part of what... like, damaged this initial box office performance, I think, there's a mass shooting at the time.
Yeah.
And in that movie, there's, like, an insane mass shooting in a church.
In the church, yeah.
And that might have been around the time of the Dylan Roof murders. I'm not sure. But the point is, like, that was, like, in the news and people were talking about it. I don't see anyone talking about, at least I haven't seen it yet, connecting Deadpool 2, like, should we be sending our kids to see it kind mm-hmm. of thing. And it's an R-rated movie.
Yeah.
And with this latest tragedy, it's probably too fresh and the timing is too, like, close.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that, like, overall, I think...
But it's also not an exact parallel. It's like this one kid is gonna maybe shoot this or kill this one guy with his mutant powers, not with a gun, and, like, it doesn't end up happening, and it's not a mass shooting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think I like the message in the movie that he's trying to save the kid, and he stops him from going down a dark path.
Right.
And he is, instead of ignoring the problem... well, I mean, that's part of the movie. He ignores the kid, and then he has to grow to realize, no, I have to, like, help the kid.
Right.
So I think, like, in a weird meta way, it's a good message in this fucked up violent movie, you know? So, and, like, that's, like, what's, like, kind of confounding about the movie to me. It's like I said, it's just really interesting. Like, it beyond its comedy, there's just all this, like, stuff churning behind the scenes that's pretty smart.
Like, actual themes and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, I think they would have done... I'm not sure if they would have done it would have been better if they tone down the comedy and up the interesting themes they had, mm-hmm. it was probably for the best that it's all, like, buried in the subtext.
It would have been a totally different movie.
It would have, but, like, I think this movie is going to, like, play on audiences in a strange way, you know? Mm-hmm. I think people are going to watch it, and most of them are going to laugh. Like, our theater was laughing the whole time and pointing at the screen.
Yeah.
But I think, like, really, when you step back and think about it, there a lot happened.
Yeah.
And it was an interesting, well-written superhero movie. It shoots up high in that genre mm-hmm. of having something to say.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's like, you wouldn't think the Deadpool movies would have anything to say in general, like, in terms of a societal standpoint. Mm-hmm. But Deadpool really kind of has to, because of all the references and the meta-ness of it. It's almost like they... So when you're commenting on a superhero like genre in that way, you're gonna go into themes that you wouldn't, that maybe the standard superhero movies aren't gonna get into as deeply, or as they're not gonna hit as squarely.
Right.
So it's just strange. Like, when we started this review or this episode, I was like, you know, I don't like Deadpool 2 as much as Deadpool 1. Now I'm talking myself into thinking I kind of like Deadpool 2 more than Deadpool 1.
I mean, I don't even really know which one I like better.
Right, I like them both.
The only
yeah.
thing I was pointing out to begin with that I still stand by is that the tone is a little bit different, and that's
yeah.
all.
Yeah, so yeah. let's talk about more about the tone. Like, it's just, it's a movie jam packed with ideas and set pieces and things, and it skips between them really fast. So before you can get bored with one thing, they skip to the next. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's, like we said, there's a lot of good ideas. You see him as an international assassin briefly. You know, that's kind of an aspect of the character. You see him as an X-Man in training, mm-hmm. and in the X-Men universe briefly. You see him forming X-Force, and that's like its own, like, oh, could be a movie and will be a movie in the future too. You see him dealing with Cable, who's his own movie and thing, you know? Like, so you see, like, all these, and you see him fighting the Juggernaut. Like, that's almost like its own thing. Like, it could be its own separate thing. And in the end, you see him time traveling and messing with the timeline. And it's like all these really great ideas, like, mixed together, and they're just jumping from one to the other. And it's like you want to, you almost, you have this desire as you're watching it. You, hey, I want to see him more in the X-Men. No, I want to see him more with X-Force, you know? And they kind of confound you by just going through it fast. But each sequence itself is so well done that it makes you wanting more. And to me, that's like a sign of a good piece of pop culture. You know, to me, I always say that about, like, a pop song is really good when it's, like, over in 2 minutes and makes you want to hit replay, instead of it being 4 minutes where they're playing the same song for you twice in one go. It's like, no, just give me, like, 1:59 and I'll replay it myself, because I need to capture that hit of, like, happiness again that just, like, flew by me really quick. And I think Deadpool 2 has a lot of that as well. And just, you know, wrapping up the discussion of tone, visually, it's very interesting too. I love the visual style of the Deadpool movies. You see the X-Men, or the X-Men universe, in a way, it's just a much more vibrant, beautiful way than you maybe do in the Bryan Singer versions, mm-hmm. for the most part. Mm-hmm. They do a better job of capturing the color and fun of the X-Men movies, which is like a big complaint that we've talked about when going through the movies.
Like, how to represent that.
Yeah, there's just a lot more color and fun. You know, briefly, I know we're going to wrap up soon, but I like the assemblage of X-Force. Mm-hmm. Particularly the Shatterstar cameo was just hilarious to me.
Yeah.
Because he mentions the Mojoverse.
Right.
And he's got the swords, and, you know, when he dies, he's like a pile of green goo and blood.
Yeah.
And I think this movie does more. This movie picks up from the MCU of what they're doing lately, too, with a lot of color and vibrancy. Uh-huh. Sort of like the Thor Ragnarok visual palette and style. So I think that's good to inject that into the X-Men world.
Right.
So we get that, too. So the tone and the music's really good in this movie, too. A lot mm-hmm. of fun musical beats and moments. You know, some other just stuff before we go that I'll say. Again, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, a great character. Probably used just the right amount, but you feel like you could see her more. And this time she's got Yukio, her girlfriend, mm-hmm. which I like. That's just kind of funny. They just dropped that in. I'm not sure if Yukio is a real X-Men character or not. I have no idea. She's not familiar to me. She, like, whips a chain around and it gets electrified.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that is. Uh-huh. But again, funny to see Negasonic Teenage Warhead. And
yeah, I'm kind of hoping that they have bigger parts in the next movie.
Yeah, they could all stand to... Yeah. Well, that's like the... To me, that's the ultimate question of the movie. Is the movie great because they limit all this stuff? If you got too much of it, would it be not work?
Right.
So, or is it like, can we actually stand to see more of this stuff and expand it in a more serious way?
Well, we'll find out in the next movie, I guess.
Yeah, we don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk about, Sonya, is the post-credits ending with the time traveling.
Yeah.
I thought that really worked as well.
Yeah.
Again, not for the humor, but for the X-Men-iness of it, you know?
I thought for the humor, too.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, like, I just don't... I like Ryan Reynolds. I think he's charming and funny, but I don't find the meta around Ryan Reynolds humor like that interesting.
Uh-huh.
You know, when he, you know, so Deadpool shoots Ryan Reynolds because he's reading the Green Lantern script and he tries to stop him.
I mean, it's not like laughing hysterically funny. It's like a chuckle to yourself funny.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I guess it's good. But I just like him using time travel to mess up the timelines of all these movies. Again, you know, it's almost like making fun of, X-Men Days of Future Past and X-Men Apocalypse in the way he goes to Wolverine Origins and kills his previous version of himself as a character with Hugh Jackman standing there. That was, I really appreciated that. I thought that was really funny and well done and like a nice beat. And I just like the comments that Negasonic Teenage Warhead makes to her girlfriend about, I don't know why we decided to help him and fix the time travel device. This is probably a really big mistake.
Right.
You know, Cable's going to be really mad. And I thought that was just a good touch.
Uh-huh.
And I like time travel in my X-Men movies in general. So
yes, definitely.
I appreciate all that stuff. So,
all the problems it creates.
Yeah. that's right. Yeah. And again, it's like a good escape hatch for this eventual Disney-Marvel merger that may or may not happen. Where they could, because they're definitely going to carry over Ryan Reynolds one way or the other.
Do they have a timeline for this thing? I feel like it's a may or may not happen has been like in the works forever.
If it's going to happen, it's going to be at the end of summer 2019. That's when the deal's going to be done.
2019?
Yes. It's going to take a long time for the deal to be done. Once the deal's done, then they can start making movies, which again will take 2 to 3 years.
Okay.
So it's going to be a long time.
All right.
But the thing is, like, the question remains, are they going to carry over this... the X-Men continuity as we know it to the Marvel Universe, or are they just going to start from ground zero with new casting and everything?
Yeah.
They're probably going to do new casting, except they can't recast Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. It's too marketable. The movies are too big of a hit. The fourth wall breaking meta-ness of them will allow the character too, in a way, to come to the MCU. They'll make a joke about it when he shows up with Iron Man or whoever, you know, Doctor Strange. There'll be some joke that's allowed to make where he's allowed to come to the new universe and also reference the previous movies and say, like, hey, why is there a new Professor X again? Like, I can't keep up, you know?
Yeah.
So that'll happen.
Okay.
Like I said, there's the time travel element at the end of this movie. It's another escape hatch where, much in the same way at the end of Avengers Infinity War, where the timeline's all messed up with the Agamotto, you know, at the end of Avengers 4, there might be some weird tiny reference to Fantastic Four or the X-Men 2 that allow them to do that too. When you've got time travel, it allows, like, it allows corporate brands to cross over in ways that make sense just because.
Mm-hmm.
So Deadpool 2... a real treat for X-Men fans, I have to say.
Yeah.
And I like that aspect of it. They fell back. Deadpool could have really been about anything. It could have just been about Ryan Reynolds going off on a crazy adventure that had nothing to do with the Marvel Universe. But they fell back more on the Marvelness, on the X-Men-ness. And that's a good place to fall back on, because the X-Men universe is so rich and deep and complex. You have all these millions of characters like Shatterstar, like the Mojoverse, like Domino. There's just so many avenues that you could just pluck and pick from that Deadpool gets that, I think, more than the other X-Men movies do, you know, those movies are trying to be, like, quote-unquote good movies.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, they mess up a little bit because nailing the X-Men's hard to do.
Yeah.
In Deadpool, it's like a free-for-all, and it's almost better that way. So it's a free-for-all of X-Men stuff. Cable's traveling in the past, you know. Everything we just discussed.
Right.
So, like I said, real treat for X-Men fans. Really nice. It's kind of wonderful to see this movie come to life in a lot of bizarre ways. And I'd say my final word, just to reiterate, again, a more interesting movie than funny, and the humor didn't really do it for me, but, like, that didn't stop it from me from really liking the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your final thoughts on the movie? I've been rambling quite a bit.
Yeah, it, like I said, it wasn't as funny as I thought it was going to be, but it was engaging throughout. I'm, you know, happy to have spent the money on a ticket to go see it. I don't feel like I need to see it again anytime soon. But
it'll be fun to, once it's a digital release.
And it continued the storyline, a storyline that I liked. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure I'm going to go pay some more money for a ticket to the next one of these that comes out. Yeah. So
I have one last discussion topic.
Okay.
And we don't have to get that deep into it, but can you see Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool working in the MCU, which is a little less R-rated? You know, Disney has promised that if they carry on Deadpool, they're going to keep it R-rated, but that's like would be the Deadpool movies. But do you even want to see him talk to Iron Man or Captain America or Doctor Strange or Black Panther? Is it even necessary to include him?
I don't know if it's necessary. I don't know. People really like those movies where all the characters come together. Yeah. I don't really care about that, to be honest. Like, the Civil War thing, like, whatever. Yeah. I don't want to see all the characters fight each other. I don't care. Like, you know, all these, the ones where it's, I think people like it because it's like, the more crossover there is, the more it seems like
the bigger
their
deal.
Universe is part of our universe. Right. Like, it's all one world.
Yeah.
But for me, it's fine if they all live in their own separate universes and maybe make funny jokes about each other once in a while and leave it at that and let them all have their own storylines. So, like, I personally don't really care if there's crossover between Deadpool and, like, the
Black
MCU
Panther.
Movies. Like, it'll be fine if there is. I'm sure that they'll, like, make it work.
It'll be funny,
all of these movies so far have been
working
good in their own ways.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that would be fine. If it doesn't happen that way, for me, that's also fine.
You know, I'll just say one last thing. I totally agree with you. As a comic book reader, I never enjoyed the annuals that much.
Yeah.
So, and as we said, the annuals are once a year, each major franchise is like a major crossover event with other ones. Or it's like a double stuffed issue with like a lot more cameos than you'd get normally.
Right.
So in the X-Men, they would meet the Avengers for a one-off adventure. And then they would make references to their other adventures. It was like a promotional gimmick to make you buy a different comic series than the one you're reading in many ways.
Yeah, right.
And from that standpoint, I never enjoyed them that much because I kind of did want to get back to the story I was following.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this like extra long double issue where I'm kind of slogging through it a bit it's cool to see Spider-Man and Iron Man together, but I kind of want to get back to the adventures of Spider-Man. And and that's what those movies are really mirroring. They're mirroring the annuals. It's like, hey, we've done like the past 2 years, we've done like three different solo movies or sequels on the characters individually. Now they're all going to come together again, and then they'll break off again, and then they'll come together.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like I was never that big of a fan of the annuals. So it's funny how that kind of translates to the movies in a weird way too.
Yeah.
Although I've been enjoying more than you, I think Avengers: Infinity War and Civil War and stuff. I like them.
Uh-huh.
You know, I think they're audacious in their own way. So, again, to me, they're just like everything, it's just all a treat to me. A treat for comic fans. I think they're, you know, they're just fun.
Yeah.
So, to think that deeply about them is like kind of missing the point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, anyway, that's all I have for our special Deadpool 2 review episode. Next week, we should be back with another X-Men Tast episode, back to the regular timeline.
Yep.
And we might have some fun surprises in that episode, but I'll close with our normal plug stuff. Follow me on Twitter, @WillieSimpson. Join our Facebook group where we can talk more about Deadpool 2, X-Men Task Podcast. Just search out that group. You'll find us. Also, rate and review us on iTunes, 5 stars, or whatever podcast service you use. It really helps us out with our visibility. Any final words, Sonya, Deadpool fan, that such as you are?
No, that's it.
Okay, you're tired out. Okay. Yeah, I'm tired out too. So good night, everybody.
Good night.